to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jody Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Eleni.
Hello, Jody. How are you?
You can see I'm so gleeful because we just had an amazing listening party for our theme, Health Compass, Navigating Wellness Careers. 6 live broadcast recordings in one day, 12 top executives, amazing networking, great gift bags, energy, inspiration all around.
It was amazing. Before we talk about who our incredible guests from that day were, I want to hear, Jody, what did you do after the day, after having been on all those interviews, talking, what was your relaxation?
Great question. Well, Natasha made the day so easy for me, and our whole leadership team was there, which made the day so easy for me. So I actually went home and I went out to dinner with David and we had a date.
Oh, that's so nice. Okay. That was a really productive, your hair and makeup's already done, I guess. So amazing. Okay. A big thank you to all of our incredible guests who joined us that day, shared their insights. Absolutely tune in for the episodes from this party. Smita, Claire, Sonia, Dr. Aaron, Taryn, Kelly, Liz, Sarah, Dr. David, Vicente, Brian, and Lisa. You will hear more from all of these people and see more in our recent LinkedIn post.
Interestingly about this episode, I think that there are more people that I hadn't met before. And usually I know a lot of the people, right? Because it's sort of like I build my network and I invite them to the show. So this is actually like a huge day of learning for me.
Oh, that's so cool. You would really know those conversations because everybody just got along so well. I think that's the spirit of the show, but it really is like so incredible to see friendships being formed on the show and then offline too. People are exchanging contact information, becoming people in each other's networks, and it's a really special day.
So now we need to ask our LinkedIn community for help.
Yes. Tell us more.
Okay. We have our next theme. It's called Career Capital. I love this title, Career Capital, Voices in Beauty, Finance, and Investing. And we want to have on the show those people who are so behind the scenes on the money and investing side of the business. So that's going to be CFOs, it's going to be venture capital people, private equity, investment bankers, M&A. So we're putting this out there. If you're in those categories within beauty, wellness, and personal care, DM us. If your friend is, DM us. We want to build a really great guest list for our June event.
I'm so excited to hear who slides into your DMs on LinkedIn and shares network connections for this because I'm very fascinated by this topic and it's going to be a really interesting one and a bit of a new topic for our listeners who haven't heard from these people yet. So right now, focusing on who we have this month in May, this is National Women's Health Awareness Month, and our two guests for today's episode are incredibly aware, and they are definitely leaders in this space. Jody, tell us more.
Okay. Claire Coder, founder and CEO of AmpFlow, and Smita Azrani, Vice President of Partnerships, UE Life Sciences. So Claire is the expert on making sure everyone has access to menstrual health products. And Smita is an expert in making sure that everybody has access to early detection for breast cancer. Two amazing people. So I met Claire years ago because I was on the board of Girls Helping Girls, period. And obviously there's a lot of alignment between the organization and AmpFlow. And then we bought an AmpFlow dispenser for the restroom in our office. So if you want to make sure that people in your office or your store have access to free menstrual health products when they need it, where they need it, please check out AmpFlow.
It's an amazing brand, and Claire has an amazing story. She had the entrepreneurial bug since a very young age. She told a really great story at age 16. She purchased a fake ID for the purpose of attending networking events for people 21 and up, and she was never carded, but she did start her journey at that very young age, and you'll hear more about how she turned her business into what it is today. Who is on the show with her?
Yeah, so Smita brought her iBreast device from UE Life Sciences to the event. It's this teeny tiny device, like kind of the footprint of a cell phone, and it's an early detection device. So it actually works harder, is more reliable than a doctor's hands in doing a manual breast exam. So her company is on the mission to really make sure from a femtech perspective that early cancer detection as possible.
That's amazing. Yeah, Smita shared her personal commitment to honor her late sister's legacy through this business and really empower individuals affected by cancer to speak up about their experiences so healing can begin. It's a really great episode.
I think we should hear from Smita Azrani and Claire Coder, episode 283.
Let's get into it.
Welcome to Where Brains Meets Beauty. We're talking all things women's health access with Claire Coder, CEO and founder of AmpFlow. Hi, Claire.
Woohoo!
And Smita Azrani, Vice President Partnerships, UE Life Sciences. Hello.
Hi.
So we're sitting here at our listening party. We do have a live audience. Can we hear you?
Yeah.
And this is a career journey show. So we're going to start at the very beginning, dreams and hopes, right? So when you were 10 years old, Clara, what career did you dream of having?
I wanted to be Britney Spears, which was, right. I had big hopes and dreams. It was concerning for my parents. I didn't know why. Maybe it was because I wasn't good at singing whatsoever, or maybe it was because it was Britney Spears. I don't know, but I really practiced every day.
And how far did you take it? Like, for how many years was that solo goal?
We took it, it became a family initiative, because for my birthday, I asked for a stage in my closet. So thankfully, my dad was very crafty, and he actually made a stage in my closet, and then my mom made a microphone. As you can tell, I was just before the podcast, I was like so intrigued with the microphone. I'm becoming Britney Spears, as we're. And then every single day I performed. Like, I'd get home from school, I'd do some like Britney Spears. It was all Britney Spears songs too, by the way. I had like the Britney Spears outfits. I was 10. And I think it continued until about 13. And then I became, I realized I wanted to become a dolphin trainer.
Oh.
So I don't know, something happened in my brain, it switched. I realized Britney Spears was so impractical, I should become a dolphin trainer instead. Much more practical. And then thankfully, by around age 16, my tragedy was that I broke my pelvis, because at that point I wanted to become a Rockette. But then I broke my pelvis, which turned out to be quite okay, because then when I was sitting for a while, my grandma gave me a button maker, and then I started making buttons, and that's how I learned that I was kind of good at business. Better than all of my other previous career aspirations, in fact. So that's my childhood.
This is very fascinating. I mean,
but of course you needed to be a dolphin trainer. Like,
but of course, because I was from Ohio, and I really wanted to see a dolphin and experienced dolphins, and I was going to make a whole profession out of it, even though I had never even seen a dolphin with my own two eyes.
Smita, how do you top this as a 10-year-old?
I'm just still thinking about the dolphin trainer. But that was fun to hear, I have to say. So mine was a little more straightforward, although I just knew I loved animals, and I loved horses in particular. So I asked my dad for a pony when
pony
I was very
trainer.
Young. Mm-hmm. But then I got on a pony one time, and the handler lost grip, and the pony just started running. So I'm like, okay, I don't need a pony anymore.
Were you on the pony when this
happened? I was on the pony. This is when I was on vacation in India. I was about 6 years old. And I said, okay, no more ponies.
But wait, we have to press pause here and go back. So you're on the horse, and it just starts running. And
yeah, so the handler put me on the horse and then made his noises for the horse to keep going, the pony to keep going, and so something spooked the pony, and the pony just started, he just shedded, and there was no, I don't even think there was a harness. Was there a harness? I just held onto that pony's neck.
Oh.
I was scared, but I did, I know that I'm thinking, it was exciting, you know, but, so that was my interaction with the pony, so I gave that up, but anyway, the point is I loved animals, and I always thought of something to do with animals. That never happened, because that's really not a, you know, there's no real immediate money in it. So my guidance counselor in college told me, just major in finance and you'll be fine. That was it. But at 10 years old, I really had nothing and no idea what I was going to be quite honest. All I knew is I liked pretty clothes like any other girl. I liked makeup and I liked to talk. So I don't know what that would translate to.
Before we go deep into your journey, I just want to talk about how we all met each other. So, Claire, I met you through Girls Helping Girls, period, which I was on the board of for many years. And the moment I found out about your company, I'm like, we need to install an AntFlow machine in our restroom, which we have here, which is like an old edition. Is that like edition one or two?
You're an early supporter. I love that dispenser in there. But yes, I think it's within the first 3,000 batch.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we have over 60,000, so you're really early adopter. Cool. Thank you for the support.
And Smita, you were at a HerMD event and met one of our team members, and then we connected, and we just stayed connected.
It's unbelievable. I was at that event for 10 minutes, and I met her, and through her, here I am.
Yeah, isn't that wild? Yeah, so I say, like, you just never know where you're going to meet that next special person. You just have to, you know, introduce yourself, say hello.
Yeah, you just have to go with the feeling that, oh, this is a nice person. I get a good vibe, and then just start conversing. And
is that natural for you?
Very, Very. I'm a vibes person. So if I don't feel it, I won't be there.
What is your exit strategy?
It's a good question.
Because you know you're in those networking events and you're like, oh, I don't feel it. Mm-hmm. Like we know. Yeah. We got the vibes and we're like, oh, yeah. But then you're trapped. What's your exit?
Okay. So the people that I have spoken to, I will, you know, the ones that I've spoken to deeply, there'll not be that many of them, maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. In this event, it was just Erica, mm-hmm. that one mm-hmm. person. I said bye to her and that's it. I didn't do anything else. I just left.
You weren't like, oh, let's stay connected on LinkedIn.
For Erica, yeah. But everybody else that I said hi, bye to, I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
What do you do when you want to get out of a conversation?
I'm uncomfortable sharing it to the public in the event that I meet somebody and I do it to them. But because we're all just hanging out here.
Right, and no one's recording
and
this.
And no one's recording this. I have two exit strategy moves that I have deployed. So the first one is at a networking event. I immediately, like when I realize the vibes aren't there, my exit is, this is so awesome. How about we just stay connected on LinkedIn? And then I share my LinkedIn and then I depart. And then the other exit strategy, which I do think is also very practical, if you're out and you're dancing and somebody comes and like grinds mm-hmm. up on you and you're like, I'm just here to dance. Mm-hmm. Once again, Britney Spears. Mm-hmm. I take the person's hand. I move to a twirl motion. And as I am exiting the twirl, I keep walking and don't go back into said twirl with the person. And that's the move.
That's fantastic. I love it. I'm using that. We're all using that.
Sorry. Okay. Back on track with our career plans and aspirations. But it was a good
approach. This is a good tip. We all needed that. Can we agree?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like, Amanda, we need to get the twirl captured on video. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think we should do a little demo.
Who's going to be the twirly? Yeah, I'm happy to demonstrate it for, you know, helping out the next generation.
So may I make a suggestion, offer? We can also just say, it was nice to meet you. I'm going to move along. Like, we don't have to hide from this idea that we have to stay in conversation with someone forever.
It's okay. So when you're talking to someone, you know whether you want to stay in this or not, you know, in 1 to 2 minutes, maybe less. Okay. But let's say 1 to 2 minutes. And then you just, you know, be cordial and mm-hmm. be good and just kind of end the conversation. I mean, I usually don't do this, by the way. It's very rare that you'll meet someone that you just can't deal with the vibe. And that's also your learning process, right? You cannot just shut everything out. You have to figure out how to deal with it. So that's something that I'm doing actively as well. It could be my day. Maybe I'm having not such a great day, so I don't feel like conversing. It could be my vibe. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't want to say that I just jet set out of every event. I'll tell you, out of the, say, 100, 500 events I've been to, I've only done this once where I've just not felt it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's really nothing for me here. That's just, but then it could be just me too, right? So I don't want to put it out there that it's everyone else.
Right. Well, I found that historically when I go to events, big or small, my mindset is like really negative at first, even though like it's my job, I know it's important. I have to really talk to myself in my head and be like, yeah. I am going to find value here, yes. even if it is one person or learning one new thing. Yeah. And if I can stay the end, I really force myself to, because sometimes that's when magic happens.
That's true.
So I've learned to accept that it's uncomfortable. And the more I do that, the more powerful I feel, I guess, in that discomfort. But it's always worth it. And I feel so much like dignity inside to say like, I did something that made me feel really uncomfortable. And if I explain this to my teen kids, if I said like, I went to an event, I was uncomfortable, they'd be like, okay, like it's not really that big a deal. Like, why, yeah. you know, why does it yeah. feel so overwhelming? So I just try to move through it because there really is something invaluable on the other side.
And Jody, yeah. this is why you are the host and we are the guests and you are the best. And we're just sitting here listening to you. We are learning every day.
So let's talk about learning. First jobs, like real jobs. What was your first job out of college?
My first job out of college was with a commercial insurance company. Mm-hmm. And I was in finance. So I worked on, it was on Water Street. And it was in the 90s. And I remember going in, and I hate numbers. So don't ask me why I majored in finance. It's such a contradiction. So they asked me to calculate something, and you know what I did? Instead of putting it into Excel, I did it manually.
You mean like handwritten, like in school?
Yes. And you know, I don't know why I did that, and surprisingly, everything was right. Mm-hmm. So I shocked myself there, but
I didn't really fit into that job much because everything was a black and a gray suit. And I used to walk into my, you know, in with my yellow suits and my pink suits mm-hmm. and my, you know, and back then in the 90s on Wall Street or, you know, whatever that area, forget about it. Mm-hmm. So I just felt like my attitude was very flamboyant compared to the calm and toned down attitude that needed to happen, right? So I'm like, okay, this isn't working out for me. But that was my first job, and I did learn a lot from it. So I'm grateful. And then, you know, I just moved on to Sotheby's.
So we were definitely shopping in the same place because my first job, I had like the most like loudest colors of like suits because that was like sort of the dream. Like, I'm going to get a job in New York City. I'm going to dress up, right? So it was like chartreuse suits and yeah. pink suits and yellow suits. And it was like wearing costumes. Like, that's right. Literally why I had that job, to wear those costumes.
So actually, we all wanted to be Britney Spears. I was just the only one that said it out loud.
Yes, you're the brave one.
Claire, where did you start in your career after school?
Well, so my first job was a party princess. But I only went to college for one semester. Mm-hmm. So in high school, I realized I'm not going to be a Rockette, I'm not going to be a dolphin trainer, and I'm mm-hmm. not going to be Britney Spears. Mm-hmm. And then I start making buttons. And I make buttons and magnets and compact mirrors with my button maker from mm-hmm. my grandma. And I'm just handing them out to my friends, and people are really enjoying them. And then I ask my parents, like, hey, can I have some more money so that I can buy more supplies? Mm-hmm. And my dad said, I'll give you a loan mm-hmm. because he had to teach me about cost of goods sold. So I take out a loan from my dad for $250, and I then start making my buttons and magnets, and then I start selling them because I have to pay back my dad. And I build out a little button business within my high school and within my community, which was Toledo, Ohio. And then I started selling on Etsy, and my Etsy business started growing. And in high school, I'm like selling a lot of buttons.
Wow.
To the point where I became one of the top sellers on Etsy.
Wow.
In 2013 and in 2014.
And you're like 16 years old?
Yeah, I'm like 17, mm-hmm. 16, 17. But meanwhile, I'm also bad at math, and I'm sucking at school. Like, school was not for me. I never felt good at it. I was candidly cutting class. Mm-hmm. I got a fake ID so that I could, like, go to networking events that were 18 plus.
Why did I know you then?
I know.
We all want to know Claire at 16.
You were getting a fake ID to go to networking events
that were 18 wow. plus?
Not, turns out not they, bars.
They never carded me, but I did buy the fake ID, and I still have it. I don't use it. Don't worry. But, yes, so that was me. And then my first like real job where like I reported to someone was I was a professional party princess, and my friend started the business, and I would go and dress up as Anna, and she would be Elsa, mm-hmm. and we were the snow princesses, obviously not Frozen related, copyright, mm-hmm. duh. And we'd go and perform at little kids' birthday parties. But as I was graduating high school, I really knew like college was not for me. Mm. But I was dating a boy, and, you know, Ohio State didn't seem that bad because the boy was there. So I got into Ohio State. I went there. I studied comparative religion. And I was there for a semester when I started my period unexpectedly at an event. And that was the impetus of what I've been doing for the past 9 years. But that was my very short-circuited career, which is actually quite concerning because my team knows that I've never had a boss, and sometimes I show it.
Mm. Okay, we're going to get back to that. So,
I think it's girl power. I love it. I love the energy.
We're all talking about women's health here and solving women's health solutions. And you just set us up for the next topic, which is challenges and opportunities. So, Smita, let's start with you. What have been some of the like the biggest things that you face in this career to try and, you know, advance your career and your goals in the business?
I think generally, I haven't really faced any such hurdles mm-hmm. as far as trying to advance my goals in the actual health space that I'm mm-hmm. in now. I've been lucky enough to have the support of a good executive team, and they kind of let me, you know, build on my existing skill set. Mm-hmm. They've identified, okay, you know, what I'm good at, not math. And I also, you know, nothing where I have to like read pages and pages. So I just like to be out there and mingle, and they understand that. So I think it's important to get a group of people around you in whatever you know setting you are you're in to help you advance, because the moment you do hit a hurdle, so it's not like we have everything's been rosy, but the conversations are there, we communicate. Okay, some powwows happen because I work with a lot of men too, but they do happen to be pretty empathetic. So I haven't had any such crazy hurdles. Now, later on when we talk about iRust exam, maybe, you know, we get into that. But as far as personal growth, I think the only hurdle that I've really faced is dealing with, you know, life issues that get thrown your way. And they sometimes translate into your professional growth, like hurdles in your professional growth. So that's what I would say.
So I'm going to try to interpret what you're saying. So we have our jobs, but we have our lives, and they intersect, right? But sometimes they intersect in positive ways and sometimes challenging ways. Is that?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Thank you. And sometimes that trickles in for everyone. So I think it's just knowing the, just getting that balance, and that's very difficult. I mean, it took me a long time, and I'm still working on it. You know, how to compartmentalize things. And I think that's an issue for all of us, especially women, because we have so many things we're juggling. I mean, this is nothing new, right? So, and that's where intuition, wellness, all of that comes into play to help you.
We're going to come back to that.
Yeah.
So, Claire, and you just set the stage for this. You haven't had managers before, and now you are the manager, the leader. How is that a challenge for you?
Every single day, hour, and living, breathing moment. I mean, look, I started my business, Aunt Flo, when I was 18 years old. By that point, I was an aspiring Rockette dolphin trainer and failed Britney Spears. And then I was a professional party princess and an umpire for T-ball. So I really had the prerequisites to become a founder of a multi-million dollar business. Duh. And I've had so many challenges from a people management perspective, because unlike a lot of other things, you can actually just, most other things you can either learn relatively quickly or read a book about it. But with management, from my personal experience, it really is a repetition game. And just being 18 to now where we are today, I'm now finally becoming a bit more comfortable and understanding, because I've had enough repetition. But some of the challenges are simply like, I don't even know what a good boss looks like because I've never had one. I also don't know what bad looks like because I've also never had a bad boss. And so it's hard to do things from a management perspective when you don't even know what good or bad looks like. You just are it. And that's certainly been a challenge for my team. I've worked with some of my team members now for many years, and they've given me direct feedback on how to improve and what I can do better, and kind of coming into what my own management style looks like. But it's definitely been the biggest challenge for me personally, is building my team and finding what good, positive leadership from a management perspective can look like.
So you've had a lot of bosses.
Yeah, give me some recommendations. Yeah. Let's download on this.
Yeah, so I think that's a really great point. I've managed people in the past as well. And just because you were talking about that, I want to go with that that topic really quick. It's such a learning curve. When I first started managing people, even though I'm an emotional person, I didn't show it. I was very, okay, but we need to do this, you know, we need to do that. Like, it was all about work. And you start realizing it's not all about, you have to look at the human being. And I was like that, right? So why am I not understanding that that's how to manage? So my management style evolved over the years. My goodness, you know, I went into retail and I saw how hard my team was working. And I realized that you cannot have people come in and work 12-hour days without, you know, talking to them and about other things. So that was a huge, huge learning curve for me. And my style definitely evolved from that. And that is why I think the universe brought me to where I am. And in general, just understanding women's health. A lot of other personal things happen in my life and they change you. The fact that I had a lot of bosses also, their management styles affected me drastically, because there are certain things they did and that certain styles they had that I, you know, didn't exactly appreciate. And I was like, I never want to be like that. So then you just end up, you know, adjusting your style based on who you're managing and who's managing you.
So now I'm going to let you two unleash on the challenges of women's health and the mission that you have, because there's a lot to say and a lot to talk about. So we'll start with you, Clara, the challenges you're facing in women's health from a menstrual health accessibility perspective. Tell us what these hurdles have been and how you're overcoming them.
Yes. Wowie. So winding the clock back to 2016, I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I start my period unexpectedly. I go to the bathroom. I find a quarter-operated tampon and pad dispenser. I don't have a quarter. And naturally, as women do, I'm making my own tampon out of toilet paper and thinking there has to be a better way. So in 2016, at that time, and being in Ohio, at that time, there was no policy around accessible period care. And when I started to have this idea, I did a whole bunch of research online. Like, how has nobody ever thought to make period care just as accessible as toilet paper, soap, and paper towels? Well, 9 years later, I've learned because it's super hard. But at the time, at 2016, I was 18 and I was naive and I had a lot of chutzpah. So I ended up leaving college to start this business. And one of our biggest challenges with AntFlow early on, and still sometimes to this day, is there's no market for B2B period care. Why would businesses pay for yet another thing to offer for free to their employees? How will schools ever afford to offer tampons and pads in the bathrooms? The kids are just going to take them and they're going to sell them on the black market for tampons. Like, there's no market for this. But fast forward 9 years, as we're sitting here today in 2025, 28 states have now passed policy to either require or fund schools to offer free period products.
That's amazing.
We have been able to, right? I know. Yeah. We have been able to prove that by offering free period products in the school bathrooms, not in the nurse's office, you go to the nurse when you're sick, not when you're having a natural bodily function, in the bathroom, it increases attendance amongst girls. No brainer, right? Like, one in four students can't afford tampons and pads. They're not covered by SNAP or WIC. So if you make them available, kids will show up. And we've also been able to prove for employers that 86% of women have started their period unexpectedly at work, and 64% have left work to get supplies. So it's actually an HR issue of how can you make sure that your menstruating employees have access to these basic necessities at a cost-effective rate. So it took 9 years to, quote, develop said market that I believe was always there. We just had to prove it with the data and the numbers. But it's still a dialogue and it's still a discussion of how big is this market opportunity? What is the market opportunity? And that dialogue comes into play when raising money, when talking with investors, when talking with strategic partners, even when talking with customers. Why would they budget for this? So holistically, I think that that is one of our biggest challenges with AntFlow and perhaps generally with women's health, because it's always underwritten, it's always underscored, and nobody for some reason believes that there's a market for it. But that's one of my challenges. What your thoughts?
And I think the more we talk about it, the better it's going to be and the louder, you know, our voices, right? So my challenge, so with eye breast exam, the biggest challenge we face right now is that there's no device. If we don't have the mammo, there's nothing else for women under 40. So right now, if you're under 40 and you want to get some sort of breast exam or screening test, besides a risk assessment, which is a bunch of questions, which is very valuable, there's no other screening tool available in the market.
Other than hands.
Other than hands, which by the way, is dying. I don't know how many of you have had a clinical breast exam at your OBGYN's office, but it is very quick. And it's very obviously helpful, which is why we want your primary care physician to do it as well, but it's not happening enough. And there's so much value in that, but nobody gets it done. So we want to see devices out there that women can use who either are afraid of mammos, who have heard, you know, things about their breasts being squeezed, it's painful, they just don't want to interact with the health system, insurance doesn't cover it because they're under 40. Whatever reasons you have for not getting a mammo, they're all legitimate, but there needs to be more options for women to get a breast screening test or an exam.
So what are the hurdles in making them accessible?
So it's acknowledging, the physicians acknowledging that this is something that we can incorporate in our workflow, which is not easy to do mm-hmm. because you have right now, for example, if you take a big health system, they already have their workflow. Everything is covered under insurance. Eye breast exam currently isn't. So we have a CPT code for it, but it's not covered. That's one of the biggest hurdles mm-hmm. in the United States. So we are looking to actively see how we can bypass that. So we're offering it for free. Mm-hmm. because we want to be able to access as many women as possible. So we do a lot of breast camps. We make sure that women understand how iBreast works, that there is an option. It literally feels like a massage. It's radiation-free. It's mm-hmm. portable. And you go home with a report if there's a finding, then you can go get your mammo mm-hmm. for the testing or ultrasound or MRI, whatever the physician recommends. But at least you have something in your hands that says, okay, there was a finding and I need to pursue this further. So if, God forbid, it is cancerous, then they can go ahead with a treatment sooner. Mm-hmm.
So this topic is very personal for you.
It is. It is very personal because I lost my only sister 5 years ago. She was 44 years old and she felt a lump on her breast that was 3 centimeters. So it was the size of a golf ball almost. And within 6 months of her diagnosis, we lost her. So the cancer went to her brain. She had this complication called leptomeningeal carcinoma and that's it. She didn't even know she was going to go. That's how quick it was. Mm-hmm. It was obviously late-stage breast cancer. Both my parents are physicians, and my father used to tell us every day, I mean, it felt like every day, girls, you have to come get your mammo. That's all he said. Let's get it done. You have dense breasts. But beyond that, there was nothing. So as girls, we didn't really understand. My mom said we didn't have family history, and we didn't. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women think that we don't need to get tested because we don't have family history. And I just want to put it out there that no one in my family has any form of breast cancer besides my sister. Mm. So we have those buckets of women that have the facility, the ability to go to facilities to get tested, but they won't do it for reasons like my sister and I. Mm-hmm. But if my
why were you opposed to it?
We just didn't. I don't even know. Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I think I didn't understand the value of, first of all, early detection, mm-hmm. of catching it early. Secondly, it just seemed like another chore. There was nothing pulling me in. So maybe if I saw eye breast exam or something pretty and cute, mm-hmm. and I know this sounds crazy, but we like cute things. Mm-hmm. Girls like things that feel good, that are comfortable, mm-hmm. that are not invasive. So maybe if I saw this device, I'd say, oh, how does this work? This is kind of neat. And it would make me feel comfortable and want to interact mm-hmm. then with a mammo machine.
So question, as a person who has not gotten a mammogram, should I be asking my doctor about this? Should I be asking for the eye breast exam?
You can. So you can absolutely do that. And we're actively infiltrating the health system as we speak. We're already in 12 countries globally. So, and we've scanned 2 million women. So we largely help lower middle income countries. But we also are in, we help the police officers, we help their wives. We have so many different streams we're going into. So here in the U.S., for example, we would look into managed care, we would look into self-pay, we would look into women's clinics, you know, who already have a system set up for clinical breast exam and want something to add on to that, generate a report. Women with dense breasts, this works beautifully for them. And they have no option. So, for example, now if you get a mammo, by law, it has to state your breast density. And your physician might or might not recommend an ultrasound and MRI, depending on your history. But I feel like it's you have to reverse educate your physician and say, mm-hmm. you know, I have whatever, an aunt who had breast cancer, and I feel like, you know, I have dense breasts. It shows on my report. Maybe I should get an ultrasound or MRI because the cancer doesn't show up on a mammo the way it does on an ultrasound for dense breasts. And I have a lot of friends whose cancer has been missed because they've done the appropriate mammograms, but their cancer still has been missed. So nobody needs to play doctor, but mm-hmm. you need to understand how all of these things work. Well, and ultimately, your physician is the one that will then recommend, you know, the appropriate
testing. Yeah, I asked the question because one of the challenges that we also face is relying on women's self-advocacy. And it sounds like perhaps that's to some extent you as well, of saying, hey, women, you do have the authority to tell your doctor you want this exam, you want the eye breast exam. And similarly, I always remind people who menstruate and also those that don't menstruate, you do have the authority to ask your boss, hey, there's no period products in my bathroom. Can we get those? Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, like, how that is in your world as well. Like, is it really, like, inspiring and encouraging people with breasts to have this dialogue with their...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And actually, we also are dabbling into advocacy. So I had the opportunity to go to Capitol Hill. It was last year. It was a Hill Day. And I was floored at the amount of power I had as just citizen of this country to actually talk to someone who is who's in the decision-making seat and say, this is why we need this particular law passed or bill passed. So we co-founded the Breast Cancer Early Detection Coalition. It's a lobbying group, and we basically get key opinion leaders, physicians, advocates, survivors. We bring them to Capitol Hill. And we teach them. I work with Liz Powell. She's a powerhouse, and she's founder of G2T Consulting. She's also a co-founder of this coalition. And so we go to Capitol Hill, and we lobby for all these bills to be passed. And absolutely, we just need to keep talking, because women need to understand that they can ask questions, because our physicians are so busy, and they're so overwhelmed with so many things. And they're human beings, too. So the more we know about our bodies, the more we can reverse educate our physicians, and they'll be less stressed too. I see it, and I want this to happen, because there's two sides, right? We have our doctors who want to help us. You know, they're not the villains. They want to help us, and we just have to help them help us. Mm-hmm. But we need to know our bodies.
Yeah.
Because they have 100 patients that see every day, so they're not going to know us the way we know us. So...
Well, I love this. Everybody that's in this room is, I mean, myself, I'm going to go to my doctor and be like, I want an eye breast exam. And then also folks that can be like, I also want tampons. So
yes,
this is
absolutely
great, great key takeaways here.
Love
Ask
it.
For
love
what
it.
You want.
Yes.
And what you need.
Bottom line.
Before we move on to the next phase of our conversation, I do want Claire for you to brag about how you talked about the challenges, but you didn't give yourself a chance to brag about how much progress you've made. How many dispensers are there out there in the world?
Yes, I will be my own brag buddy right now.
And we'll clap.
Yes, and then we'll clap. Thank you. So today, 60,000 bathrooms are stocked with AmpFlow proprietary period product dispensers.
Wow. Yay.
Right? We are in all 50 states, US, Canada, and the UK. You can find us in 150 universities, over 7,000 K-12 schools, 28
That's
of the Fortune 500 companies.
I know!
That's 2 million girls now rely on AmpFlow period products in their school bathrooms, which is really freaking awesome. And since 2021, we have donated 7 million organic cotton period products to menstruators in need as a part of our impact in our AmpFlow Foundation. And so we're just getting started. I mentioned 60,000, which is a massive number, and we're so proud of it, but there are 10 million female commercial bathrooms in the United States. So once again, we're here, and we need everybody to ask for period products in their gym and in their school and in their alma mater and in their office so that we can get all the way to here, because we're just scratching the surface still. Because once again, this is a $2 billion market that everybody for some reason believes is not existent.
Well, kudos to both of you for advancing these conversations. Last
I'm curious,
thought.
How did you find out? How did you count the bathrooms?
How do you count the bathrooms?
I don't know.
Oh, well, as a finance person, you might actually appreciate this. I go 1, 2, 3. No. There's a whole bunch of building code standards in the United States specifically on bathroom to square footage ratio.
Okay.
So it's generally like a mathematical understanding based on the building code requirements for varying different verticals and
Makes
industries.
Sense.
And that's how we backed into the number.
I bet when you were making buttons, you did not know that you would know how the bathrooms are
How
laid
many
out.
Bathrooms there are in the United States. I know, but now we do. And this is on our slide deck when we're talking about market sizing. So that we can prove to people that bathrooms and people who menstruate do exist.
Okay, before we move on to our next phase of the conversation, tell me one favorite health or wellness book that's on your bedside table or in your Kindle or device that is important to you.
Oh gosh, I use chat for everything.
You use what?
I just, you know, if I have a question or I just Google it, I
don't read much. Oh my God, get off the record. But I use Audible. I use a lot of self-help books. I mean, I have a ton. It's just that I never go through them, you know, from start to finish. Mm-hmm. I always have like 20 things and then I'll like dabble. Okay, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 mm-hmm. minutes there. So I don't think I have one specific one, but I do like to read about, you know, self-help and the spirit world. I know that that had to come out.
And Claire, anything on your list?
Yeah, look, I also don't read, but my favorite book is a picture book. It's Soul Pancake by Rainn Wilson. You might know Rainn Wilson. He's on The Office, but he also created this book and YouTube channel years ago, and it's called Soul Pancake. And it's a good little table book, but I flip through whenever I need inspiration and stories, and it's my life check and gut check for a lot of things.
Awesome. I will check that out. Yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. We're going to move on to our game. So, A game, yeah.
Ooh.
So this is the last phase of our discussion before you get to mingle with the guests in the room. Okay, so you are both completely focused in your careers on women's health access, both been involved in legislation on the topic. So we're going to play a game around, is this bill real or not?
Oh, I love this. I am so in.
So is it real or is it fake? Okay, the Stamp Act, a proposed federal law that would end the tampon tax across the country. We'll start with you. Do you think that's real or fake?
Real.
I'm so proud to say that it is real, and it has not yet been proposed this congressional session, but it was proposed last congressional session. It's not yet passed, but I was also in D.C. recently advocating for the Stamp Act as well.
Why is there a tax on tampons?
Yeah.
Like, why would that have ever have started?
I just took a shot in the dark, by the way. I had no idea.
Why would there be taxes on tampons? Yeah. Like, did that even happen?
Okay. Well, at a high level, each state taxes things differently. So in some states, food is taxed. In some states, food is not taxed. And each state has varying different tax codes. Across the United States, there are different states that have removed the tax on period products, recognizing that it is a basic necessity. Tampons are considered class 2 medical devices. And so folks have now recognized, and states have now recognized, that that should not be a taxable item because it is a necessity.
Yeah. I think that's ridiculous. Yeah. If you need me on the Hill, I'll come.
Okay, right back at you. Okay.
Okay, the next one is called Find It Early Act. It requires insurance coverage for all breast cancer screening needed for early detection regardless of breast density. It enables earlier detection of breast cancer in women with dense breasts and those at increased risk. We'll start with you, Claire. Do you think that's real or fake?
I want to believe it's real, but I'm going to say it's fake for the bit. Let's go.
Okay.
Tell your us gut Sina. Is right. It's real. So it's getting. Oh, it hasn't been passed yet.
Okay, no, it's there.
It exists.
Okay. It's a bill.
It's a bill.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Okay. All right.
The next,
that's the one we're advocating for on the Hill. So
okay,
I'll call you.
Okay, right, it's called Find It Early Act.
Party at the Hill.
Find It Early Act.
Okay. The next one is 32-Hour Workweek Act, a bill that shortens the standard workweek under a federal law from 40 hours to 32 hours over a 3-year phase and period. It also requires specified overtime pay for workdays longer than 8 hours. Both of you at the same time, is this real or fake?
Fake.
Real.
It's a real, yeah, proposal.
Ooh, mm-hmm. I totally, yeah. I'm guessing.
Okay. Maybe this is the bad manager within me, and I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
Next one is called the Good Samaritan Menstrual Products Act. It would provide Good Samaritan liability protection for donated period supplies. This will enable manufacturers, retailers, nonprofits, and individuals to donate and distribute period supplies in good faith without fear of frivolous lawsuits. Smita, do you think this
Please
is real or
real,
fake?
Real, real, real.
Tell us.
It's real, you guys!
It is? That's so
it's a real. It is a real bill, or it's a real act. Mm-hmm. It has been introduced, but not yet passed.
And why would I fear consequences if I gave away menstrual health products?
Yeah, so this act parallels a food donation act. Mm-hmm. So if you as an individual were to donate food to your local nonprofit organization, and let's say you made it in your home kitchen mm-hmm. and you use spoiled mm-hmm. eggs, right now, across the U.S., you would not be held liable, and nor would the nonprofit, because mm-hmm. you were doing this in good faith. Mm-hmm. Now, similarly, if a individual were to donate, like, an extra supply of period products, maybe you're no longer menstruating, your girlfriend moved out, whatever, you have an extra supply of period products, you donate this to a local nonprofit, and those period products that you personally donated had something on them that made them not necessarily healthy or safe. The nonprofit could get sued mm-hmm. and you individually could get sued by donating those tampons and pads. And so this act would allow individuals and corporations to, in good faith, continue to donate tampons to nonprofits to ensure that nonprofits can continue to distribute these products, because that is not something that is protected right now.
Even though we have so much to say about this, right? Even though it's individually covered, each pad or each tampon's individually wrapped.
Once again, like, this is crazy. Wild and crazy, is why you'll see many nonprofits requesting donated items. As an organization at AmpFlow, we do continue to make those donations, but there is still risk associated.
Mm. Okay, last one. It's called the Period Proud Act would create block grant funding for the distribution of period products, expanding accessibility to menstrual products for those with limited access. Specifically, it would provide funding through the social services block grant program to remove cost barriers to menstrual products and educate school officials on how to best communicate with students in need of these products. Smita, do you think this is a real act?
I mean, I know.
Is it Claire?
It sure is. Oh, I know. This is proof that we just need to have more hope.
Conversation.
We need to have more hope, and we need to believe that there is good in the world and good going on. But yes, it is a real act introduced by Senator Kasten, correct? Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It says HR 1161.
So what was the name of it? Period.
Proud Act.
Proud Act.
You know, hold that tampon.
Sorry, that was nice name. That was HR 922. Mm-hmm. I got mixed up. That is all the time we have. Thank you so much. Aww. This is so much fun.
Yay!
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.